League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Green 19 podcast. Some Green Bay Packers chatter from PackersNews.com. I am joined by Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette. He is here. I am J.R. Radcliffe, and we're chatting about a couple things. The Packers schedule, as everyone knows by now, has been out now for almost a week, and we know kind of how the 2024 season lays out. OTAs, organized team activities, are just about to get going. In Green Bay, we've got some questions, some interesting things that I'm sure everybody will be following, along with Ryan Wood, our colleagues, Tom Silverstein, Pete Doherty will be there. But we gotta talk about it, Ryan. And I want to start with the schedule, because on paper, which of course is always a delicate way of looking at things, on paper, the Packers were supposedly going to be facing one of the toughest schedules, if not the toughest schedule in the NFC, based on the winning percentage of the teams from the year before. But after all laid out on Wednesday night, well, let's be honest, piece by piece throughout the day Wednesday, it became pretty clear that the Packers have kind of an okay schedule. They don't face anybody coming off of a bye. They've got a nicely situated week 10 bye week. And, you know, it's kind of lays out like you'd expect them to be able to maybe go on a run early in the season. And then you've got a run of primetime games later on. It seems like okay. It seems like the Packers are maybe one of the winners of the schedule release, as several national outlets opined. Give me your top-of-mind thoughts as you look at where things lay in 2024.
It depends on how you look at it. Do you look at it based on structure, or do you look at it what's actually important? That's who they play. Because who they play, they're not getting a lot of favors there. This is a brutal schedule when it comes to opponents, at least on paper, right? And it reminds me of when Matt LaFleur was after the season, at the very onset of this offseason, saying to his young guys, speaking through the media, directly to his young players, and saying, what you went through in 2023 is not at all like you're going to go through in 2024. And he was talking about expectations for a team that rose precipitously, just absolutely ascension in 2023. But he could have been talking about the gauntlet of the schedule too, because only two opponents on this schedule had fewer than 7 wins last year, the Titans and the Cardinals. Only, you know, there were 6 teams with double-digit wins, 6 playoff teams. There would have been 7, but the Seattle Seahawks, who they play on the road in primetime in the toughest venue to play on the road in primetime in all the league, the Seattle Seahawks only didn't make the playoffs because they lost a strength of victory tiebreaker to the Packers, which, yeah, it's kind of it's startling to remember that that's how the Packers got into the postseason last year, was a strength of victory win. So who they play is brutal. The structure is very favorable. They got a lot of breaks in the structure. Maybe it's almost like a kudos to, okay, you're going to play some real dogs on the schedule, right? So it depends on how you look at it. I think it's very similar to a year ago when you saw on paper, well, they better get their wins early because late is really, really hard. Obviously, the difference is that a year ago it didn't turn out that way at all. You look a year ago at, you know, the trips to Las Vegas and Denver, like, oh, those are wins. They got to win those games. They lost those games. Mm-hmm. You look late in the season. Okay, they've got Justin Herbert, the Lions on the road in Thanksgiving, Patrick Mahomes back to back to back. They ain't winning those games, and they end up winning those games. So it's all on paper. Who knows what's going to happen? But on paper, you look, okay, they have a chance to go on a run early in the season. And then there's a gauntlet, 49ers, the Miami Dolphins at Thanksgiving at home in 4 straight days, the very next week on the road in Detroit. That's going to be real good. There's a gauntlet late in the season. That's how it is on paper. We'll see how it actually shakes out on the field.
Yeah. If we're looking at it as two halves of the season, you look at the first half and it is exactly what you described. There's some games in there that you would think, well, the Packers should win those games, and maybe it goes that way and maybe it doesn't. There are two games that jump out at me. First of all, we've talked at great length about the game in Brazil against the Philadelphia Eagles. They do get a mini buy out of that, which you'd expect. You know, they play the subsequent Sunday at Lambeau Field. That is a home game against the Indianapolis Colts. Perhaps, Ryan, perhaps Tyrese Halliburton, Wisconsin native.
I've heard of him.
The Indiana Pacers will be there in attendance. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just throwing something out there. Could be. You never know. I know the Pacers are near and dear to your heart. And then,
I'm over the moon, JR.
I know you are.
Don't even get me started. Legendary stuff from Tyrese Halliburton in Game 7 at the Garden. Absolutely.
And then Minnesota, a team that I think is super interesting because you just wonder how they're going to be with J.J. McCarthy. That's the first divisional opponent you face in Week 4. And then Houston, a couple weeks after that. Houston is a noon game. They have a lot of primetime games on the schedule. Four in a row, in fact, later in the season. Games that I think you'd expect to be on the primetime schedule. Houston, C.J. Stroud, Jordan Love. I mean, and somebody else made this point. Jordan Love is going to get to match up with some of the best quarterbacks in football. Caleb Williams, yeah, of course, among them Jared Goff, if you put him in that category, and you probably do. But C.J. Stroud, Jalen Hurts to start the season. C.J. Stroud's a pretty good one too. And that game actually being at noon kind of surprises me. That would seem to be one of the more high-profile, you know, sort of young team matchups in the NFL that season. You got to kind of look at what else going on the schedule. I believe that's a Chiefs 49ers week, so that's a pretty big game that's going to get some of that like later afternoon or primetime love. But I was surprised that was going to be a noon game. There's actually a pretty, you know, for people who miss those noon games, who feel like that the primetime schedule has ramped up to the point that there aren't as many noon games, you know, they got six noon games out of 7 weeks once they come back from Brazil. That's kind of cool, I guess, if you're into that old school thing.
First of all, I love it, but who would if you're saying that C.J. Stroud and Jordan Love should not be a noon game, which I'm not disagreeing with you there, who, because they still hit their max allotment, right? There's still five, yes, primetime games. Who would you take off?
Well, I guess probably versus the Saints, that Monday night game, although that's Monday night is its own thing.
The Packers don't want to touch that game because that is night, late in season, late December
at Lambeau
against New Orleans, mm-hmm, on the frozen tundra. That's set up very well for the Packers. The Packers are very thrilled with that.
Yeah, I guess the only other one would be the one against Miami, but that's on Thanksgiving, so that's its own thing. That's not going anywhere.
You know, the game that for me is going to be, look, let's start with the opener. That's a tough game for me to pick, and I don't have to pick it now. We're in middle of May, and we, mm-hmm, have a long time before going down to Brazil. But I don't know. I don't know what to think of that game. I don't know what to expect, barring any unforeseen injuries in camp. Because you want to talk about two teams that ended last season on total opposite trajectories. One going straight north, the other going straight south. And I still think the Eagles are good. Like, I 2 years ago, this was the class of the NFC. 2 years ago, say what you want about Jalen Hurts last season, it's deserved. 2 years ago, he was in the Super Bowl putting on an absolute show. Like, he's shown it. He's put it on film in this league. And a lot of that, you know, obviously he can throw the ball, but a lot of that's athleticism that at this stage in his career is not going to wane. Like, he's a bear to deal with at the quarterback position. You know that the Eagles are going to be very motivated, and they're going to frankly come into this opener ticked off about the end of last season. They had, mm-hmm, to sit in that all off season. They're going to want nothing more than to show that wasn't them, that they are better than what they put on film down the stretch last year from Nick Sirianni on down. And what better way to do that from a motivation standpoint than to go against that team that was heading straight north. That star was absolutely rising from Jordan Love on down. That's a great opportunity for them to put last season behind them. With that said, the Packers absolutely are catching a break as far as Brazil is to not be playing that game in Philly. They'd absolutely rather have that anywhere on a neutral field. Brazil, Neptune, doesn't matter. They want that game on a neutral field rather than Philly. So that's going to be a really interesting game. And I think it kind of sets a tone for both teams entering the season. With that said, the schedule does soften up for the Packers after that opener. There is a chance there, win or lose, to go on a run through September, early October. They have to do it because we thought the same last year. We thought 2023, mm-hmm, there's an early season opportunity here, and they were 3-6. So they have to do it, but there is that opportunity.
You're absolutely right. I think you were mentioning how for Philly, that is a home game, but we know Packers fans are going to travel to Brazil. So at best, that's a neutral site game. Throw in the fact that Jacksonville is one of the road games in the first half of the season. come on, we know that's going to be a neutral site game too. So now we're talking about just a ton of basically neutral to home field opportunities in the first half of the season, which further softens things up. And really, I think just accelerates interest in the second half of the season. You get that bye week in week 10. You haven't faced the Bears yet. You're going to face them right away out of the bye. Two games against Chicago and Caleb Williams, including one to close the season. That was the case last year with the playoffs on the line. That was thrilling. But you go at Chicago versus San Francisco 49ers. Of course, playoff rematch. That's going to be a huge game. That's right into Thanksgiving, the night game. First time since 2015 and the only other time since 2015 that they will have played the night game on Thanksgiving, not against Detroit or Dallas, but against Miami at home. Miami, a playoff team last year. Then they go to Detroit Thursday night, back-to-back Thursday night games. That, of course, will be high profile, possibly for the North title. Then it's at Seattle. That's three primetime games in a row versus New Orleans, at Minnesota versus Chicago to close it down. That is a wild second half to the season. And outside of that, I guess maybe the Minnesota game would be the one that might be the easiest get as it looks on paper right now. I know Miami lost a lot of guys, but I still wouldn't rule them out as a playoff contender again this year. Chicago, you know, may not be a high caliber team, but
New Orleans at home.
I mean, you never know there. So wild, wild second half of the season.
Now, that five game stretch out of the bye week to me is the season, not in terms of whether or not this team's going to go to the playoffs. I mean, I think that it would be a real surprise if they missed the playoffs. I'm not saying that. But in terms of maybe in the hunt for one seed opposed to a wild card, right, in a very competitive division. And it starts with that Bears game because, look, this is not yesteryear's Bears. This is not only a team that drafted a very talented quarterback, a known very talented quarterback, but did a hell of a job aligning everything around Caleb Williams. I mean, there's a lot of talent. In much the same way that Brian Gutekunst did with Jordan Love a year ago, putting a lot of talent around this first-time starting quarterback, the Bears have done the same thing this offseason. They already had DJ Moore, but then you go out and you get Keenan Allen. You draft Roman Dunze. There's a lot of talent for Caleb Williams to have an ideal runway to lift off his career. I think it's going to be fascinating. And I think one of the storylines of the season, certainly underrated storylines, because everyone knows – a renewal or a birth maybe of a rivalry in the NFC North with the Packers and Lions. I mean, everyone knows that. But maybe the renewal of this Packers-Bears rival, I think that'll be very interesting to track.
For sure. I think it's 15 of the last 20 games between the two teams. Packers have won. I don't even know what the winning streak is up to. Is it 9 in a row, 10 in a row?
Matt LaFleur's never lost to them.
Right.
He's been the coach since 2019. That's
pretty great. 10. Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. The Bears... yes, the Bears, I know, are itching to renew that rivalry and more than that, but this is going to be a really interesting season. I mean, like I said, coming after the draft, Jordan Love is the third most interesting quarterback in the NFC North. Now he's not the third best. He's probably, you know, you could probably still say maybe the best, maybe second, depending on how you feel about Goff or Williams, but he's definitely the third most.
Jordan Love's the guy. Jordan Love's the guy in the NFC North based on what he did last year until he proves otherwise. And he's got to still prove more to be considered the top dog in the NFC and certainly the NFL. There's some rocket arms in the AFC.
Yeah.
But as far as the NFC North, look, Jordan Love is going to get paid more than $53 million a year. That's the new floor. The Detroit Lions set that as the new floor when they gave Jared Goff that, because contracts are paid off of potential, off of projection. And if you're projecting potential between Jordan Love and Jared Goff, it's not particularly close. No. Jared Goff has found the ideal relaunching spot for his career in Detroit. He personifies that comeback story, that comeback spirit of the city. Great match there. He's a quarterback they can clearly win with. He's also a quarterback that at the end of the NFC Championship game, when you need a touchdown from the 1 yard line and you have multiple plays and enough timeouts to not have to kick an onside kick and you don't put the ball on the ground, they actually call a running play in that situation. And then they give that guy a $53 million a year contract. So, you know, Detroit on some level is always going to Detroit a little bit, but Jordan Love, he's a different guy in this division. And we'll see Caleb Williams. I mean, he's potential. His ceiling's very high too. We'll have to actually see him on a field before we can start to gauge where that is. But Jordan Love's going to get north of 53.
Well, thanks to Detroit for messing with the floor a little bit in signing Jared Goff to that contract. Because as we enter OTAs, this is one of the big storylines is Jordan Love's contract situation. I've kind of always been believing that it would be after June 1st. No reason to think that's changed now, but there's a little bit of whispering from the national guys who, by the way, have close relationships with agents. So it makes sense that they might say something, put something in the ether like, oh, if a deal gets done and oh, the two sides are far apart. A little bit of theater, if you ask me, but it is worth asking if we have operated under the assumption that this would be a done deal at some point, that Jordan Love will, of course, sign this extension. But that's really from the point of view of the Packers. The Packers are going to want him to sign the extension. What does Jordan Love want? Maybe there is some reason for him to wait or to, I don't know, ask for more. I don't know. How do you see this playing out?
Look, business deals, especially in a market that's changing, and the quarterback market is changing right now. We saw that with Jared Goff. Business deals don't get done quickly. Not if you have any business savvy. There's no rush here, right?
No.
Certainly not from Jordan Love's side, there's no rush, because there's another quarterback, Tua, in Miami, who's also going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And so whoever gets that contract first is not going to get the highest contract. That's not how this works.
So it's a staring contest.
Yeah, it's essentially what it is. I mean, look at what happened with the receiver market this offseason. A lot of receivers got paid. Who has been last now? Who's still? It's Justin Jefferson. It's the best one. You know that if you're last, you're more. So this is going to not be overnight. This is going to take some time. How long will it take? I think is interesting. The longer look, if they report to camp and the deal's not done, you start to wonder. And maybe not right away. It's not this huge distraction week one, but if you get to actual week one of the season, not week one of camp, I would imagine that a deal has to be done by the opener. I would think that if there's a deadline, that's what it is. But it's not going to be a sprint to that deadline. This Jordan Love, I can't imagine that he's in a mood to not take less than what he feels he deserves after being the good soldier for 3 years behind Aaron Rodgers, after proving his worth last year, the highest quarterback passer rating in the NFL down the final 2 months, after getting this team to the divisional playoff round and within a whisker of the NFC Championship game, showing what he can be, what he is now, what his potential is, I don't think he's going to be taking less than what he feels he deserves. So it's going to take some time.
Yeah. Will be interesting to see if he's there, how much he's there, and obviously minicamp is not that far away either. That's in, I think, the second week of June. So, there's going to be opportunities to see if he's there, how he interacts, things of that nature. I know there's questions about whether Tua will be reporting right away to Miami as well. This is the song and dance that happens every year.
Let me add one thing. Here's what we know about Jordan Love, though. This is not an animosity situation. There's no rift here between him and the team. I think that's important to point out. Do you know how we know that? Because he was front and center in the Packers schedule release video. Mm-hmm. Like he was all smile. Like this is not a bad situation. This is just business as it is. And everyone knows that. I mean, this is far away from being any type of animus, but it's just going to take some time.
Jordan Love, by the way, nice comic timing. I think he's one of the stars of the schedule release video, because Ryan, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't love the Packers schedule release video. I feel like teams have been talked into doing one of these by the success that some teams have had. And now everybody has to do one. Man, I didn't think the Packers one was very good. I feel bad. They put so much work into it. We know people who were in it. I didn't get it. I didn't get why there was there was just like this big long thing. And then, at the very end, here's the schedule. There was no tie-in. I don't know how you feel about it, Ryan. I have so many thoughts there. I don't want to be mean, because I like a lot of those people, but it was a big grimace face for me.
I don't have a lot of thoughts. I watched it. I thought that they made more of an effort than last year.
Oh, 100%.
I can't even remember what last year was. So I give, credit there.
I think David Bakhtiari got on them for not having anything more prepared last year. Last year was the soft launch of the schedule release concept.
I didn't really have any thoughts beyond that. If I'm being honest, this isn't throwing shade. Good effort. I don't really care about schedule release videos.
No, it's a brand new thing to care about. We had no, this was not a thing 2 years ago. So
right. Right. You know, I was disappointed that the Titans couldn't recapture the magic of 2023 in theirs. Really? They tried.
You tried going back to the well, which didn't seem to work yet, I don't think. But
no, you know, and I understand why, because the 2023 video, like, that had me laughing for months. I mean, just it never got old.
Yeah.
It might have gotten old. You know, they couldn't recapture the magic from that video. But other than that, I don't think I had any thoughts on schedule release videos around the league. And that was just the one thought I had was the Titans one.
Yeah. Chargers, I think, won this year's schedule release, if we're keeping score. But man, that Titans video last year, I was just belly laughing. I cried too.
I was crying, cry laughing. Like not subtly. Like I was sob cry laughing. Yeah. It was unbelievably funny.
You can't recapture that, especially now when it's like, okay, well, every team's got to do one. You got to outdo the other. We got to come up with something. I mean, it's a very difficult spot to be in. So all respect to the Packers social team. They tried a lot.
Effort is good.
And Jordan Love, good comic timing. I really think he's got a future there. Jordan Love's been out there this year. Like he's been in sidelines right. of games. Like he's living the life now, Ryan. It's good.
I thought that too. Like, you know, I think the best example of this that I've ever seen in my 10, now going on 11 years on the Packers beat, the best example of this is David Bakhtiari. Mm-hmm. His first couple years, this guy, who we know now, has a massive personality. I mean, massive. Mm-hmm. Bigger personality than even his body. Like, he's a huge left tackle, bigger personality. The first couple years, he didn't say a whole lot. Mm-hmm. He was on this veteran offensive line with Brian Bulaga, TJ Lang, Josh Sitton. He didn't say a whole lot. And you kind of wondered if there was much personality in there. But once he became the guy, and David Bakhtiari obviously became the guy, you saw the personality come out. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he's chugging beers at Milwaukee Bucks playoff games, right? And it's like, oh, okay. Nope. The personality question is checked. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love, people ask me, how Jordan Love was to deal with from a media standpoint last year. And my answer was he was refreshingly boring. Like it was, yeah. Like he was pretty boring, right? From personality. He didn't give you a lot in the answers, but like you didn't have to check the Pat McAfee show every Tuesday to figure, oh God, what did the quarterback say now? Mm-hmm. That was nice. I did not miss the drama that preceded him, right? Refreshingly boring. But I also kind of want, like, look, he is in his first year as a starter, replacing an absolute legend, a Hall of Famer in Aaron Rodgers. He is going to come in and put his head down, as a lot of young players do. He's going to focus on his work. He's going to focus on proving it. And after he does that, if he does that, and he did, what happens after that? Well, I think we're starting to see the personality come out. And I think mm-hmm. it's going to be, you know, last year, a lot of it was, what kind of leader is Jordan Love going to be as a first-time starting quarterback? Now it's, what kind of personality is he going to have now that he is the leader, now that he is the face of the franchise? I think that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Okay, so what else from OTAs sticks out? I got a few things that I know I'm personally interested in knowing, but as you head into this part of the season, are there questions you think that can be answered this week at the Don Hutson Center?
Yeah, it's all this time of year is all about reps, who's taking the reps and where. It's not about the football. It's not about the football until the pads get strapped a couple days into camp. That's when it becomes about, okay, real football. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that we're seeing another bloated rookie class that Brian Gutekunst drafted in with 11 players with the full roster. How does that shake out? Who are getting the reps and where? Talking obviously offensive line. I think from now until through camp, backup quarterbacks want to be something we watch. I mean, we're going to obviously be watching Jordan Love, but there's a lot known about Jordan Love now compared to a year ago. Sean Clifford, Michael Pratt, that's going to be worth watching. Marshawn Lloyd, A.J. Dillon, that's going to be worth watching.
Backup running back for sure.
The young receiving core, all right? There are a lot of talented guys there. We know that. But how do they continue as they develop to kind of sift through the pecking order? There, that's going to be worth watching. You say the same with Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. The difference being that you can actually use those two together much more frequently, and kind of the creativity. John Dunn, the Packers tight ends coach, said it's endless opportunities to be creative in this scheme with Matt LaFleur with those two tight ends. Well, do we start to see some of that? The defensive side, obviously, what does a 4-3 defense look like in Green Bay? Obviously, yeah. Look, it's going to be a nickel defense. It's going to be 4-2-5. I think it'll be very interesting where Javon Bullard gets the reps. I think I'm expecting it to be safety to start off. But Javon Bullard, to me, kind of profiles long-term as that classic star defensive back. I mean, he could play a lot in the nickel, in the slot. How long does it take for him to start getting cross-trained there? Are they really focused on him taking that starting safety position opposite of Xavier McKinney from the gate? How do you get the reps? So, you know, the third linebacker, who's the Sam? I don't know. There are a lot of linebackers that have, you know, from Quay Walker, Edrin Cooper, that have that athletic body type, a little undersized, great length, sideline to sideline, can move all over the field. Not your prototypical thumper that you get at Sam. So who is the Sam? I don't know. There's a lot of questions that are going to be answered when it comes to who are getting the reps and where.
Yeah, I think the secondary for me is so interesting. Has just a lot of stories. You mentioned Javon Bullard. I mean, Evan Williams, we won't see Oladapo right away with as he's coming back from injury, but a lot of new Kalen King, a lot of newbies back there. The coaching staff has been so effusive in their praise of Xavier McKinney. Like they cannot stop talking about how much they love him. So I'm curious to see him, you know, on the field and kind of what element he brings. And then there's the cornerbacks like Eric Stokes. I feel like we've talked about is kind of coming up. It's do or die for Eric Stokes. I mean, some of that's a health question, but can he contribute? He's got so much promise and, you know, hasn't been able to stay on the field. And are those injuries going to sap that speed and take that asset away from him? You know, how can he contribute on this team? I feel like the secondary is, it's not that they're lacking for weapons. It's just, I don't know how it ultimately shakes out. You mentioned like, where does Bullard play is a big part of that equation. So yeah, that's the part I'm so interested in. And you mentioned linebackers like Isaiah McDuffie. I don't know if people, he's going to be really important for this team this year. So that's another guy that I'm watching kind of closely. And, you know, I don't know. There's a lot to look forward to. I think it is exciting to see that. I think maybe the defense really can take a step forward this year. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how that takes shape. We do end up kind of learning a little bit at OTAs, like, oh, that doesn't look like it's working yet. And sometimes that stuff does bear out. There are some early impressions that do matter, I feel like.
Now, here's a question at linebacker. I want to get back to secondary, but here's a question at linebacker. Who wears the green dot? I mean, Quay Walker probably would be the most likely on, you know, theoretically, because he's going to be on the field more than Isaiah McDuffie. Isaiah McDuffie is not going to be on the field in nickel. So Quay Walker knows the defense. He's not the rookie. Edrin Cooper is. That would seem to make the most sense if it's going to be a linebacker. Mm-hmm. But you want to free Quay Walker. Just go run and hit. You know, like, you don't, the less thinking, the better react. And you wear the green dot. There's a lot of thinking involved in that. Mm-hmm. Could this be a situation where it's Xavier McKinney, where they move to safety and he's in charge of the communication? Obviously, they've got a defensive coordinator that comes from a secondary track. So how does that influence who wears the green dot? I think that that's going to be very interesting to watch. Getting back to the secondary, though, safety and corner are such different situations. Mm-hmm. Safety's completely remade, right? Other than Anthony Johnson Jr., there isn't a safety on this roster that factored on defense last year. Everyone else is new. How does that shake out? Like the learning process, obviously it's a first year defense coordinator for this team. So that kind of, they kind of, everyone's learning together, but learning each other. They're all strangers, right? They're all newly acquainted. They're getting to know each other now. Not the same way at corner. That's the opposite of a remade position. The only significant addition that Brian Gutekunst made at corner is Kalen King, a 7th-round rookie. But you want to talk about a position that is hinging on so many what-ifs, right? From Jaire Alexander, what if he recaptures that form as an elite cover man that we know he can be, that we saw him be in Dallas last year, late last season? If he's refocused, remotivated, he drops the shenanigans that led to the suspension last year. If he's healthy and he's Jaire Alexander again, well, that on its own changes the potential, the ceiling of this quarterback position dramatically from last year. But it goes on to Carrington Valentine. What if he builds on being a revelation as a 7th-round rookie last year? Keyshawn Nixon, what if this is the coaching staff that gets the best out of Keyshawn Nixon? Because the best out of Keyshawn Nixon last year was a really good nickel corner. The problem is there was no consistency. And the other half of the time, he's blowing coverages, missing tackles. in really bad moments. There needs to be consistency there. Well, what if this is the coaching staff to bring that out of him? What if Eric Stokes can finally stay on the field? It's been a year and a half at this point since he's consistently been on the field. And it looked like that when he did come back and played a few reps last season. He looked like a corner who hadn't been on the field much. He hadn't played much football. And that can be a devastating thing for a young player this early in their career. But we also know that Eric Stokes, as a rookie in 2021, he showed himself to be a first-round pick. He proved that he could play in this league. So what if he can stay on the field? If the Packers get all those what-ifs to hit, right, they're kind of at the casino when it comes to the quarterback position. If they get all of them to hit, this cornerback position's in really good shape. Ryan Gutekunst is right. But there's a lot of risk and gamble involved there, because if they don't get all those to hit, it gets thin real quick. So that's going to be something to track throughout the offseason and even early into next season.
I'll flip quickly back to the other side of the ball. You mentioned, the receivers and the tight ends and running backs especially are pretty interesting. Backup quarterback. Offensive line is pretty interesting. Jordan Morgan, their first-round draft pick. We don't know for sure where he's going to line up. If he is in that starting five, where he's going to line up exactly. A lot of options there. A lot of options throughout that line. I don't know. This is more of a question about the OTA process. When you see five guys at OTA's lineup, is that typically where they end up? Is that a really good indicator of what's to come? Or does it just begin the experimentation process and we won't know for a while what's starting to look like their best five?
I would say it's somewhere in the middle. I would say it's not something that changes a whole lot, but it's not completely static either, right? Okay. What we know about Jordan Morgan is that they're going to fail him from left tackle. They're going to give him the first shot at left tackle. If he fails from there, they'll move him around. But they want him to be their left tackle. He's going to have to compete with Rashid Walker. Played a very good left tackle last season. But Rashid Walker, from everything I saw last year, the guy, he's a good enough run blocker. The guy can play right tackle too. Right, it's not like left tackle or bust for Rashid Walker in a way that it might have been for Josh Nyman. I know that they tried him at right tackle, but Josh Nyman did not fare well at right tackle. He was a much better left tackle. Rashid Walker, he can play. We got to see him do it. But he looks like a guy that with his run blocking, his toughness, he can play the right side. So that's if Jordan Morgan's left tackle, Rashid Walker versus Zach Tom. And if there's one question I want to ask to one player in this locker room, it's Zach Tom. How much do you not want to move to center?
Yeah.
Because he can be a Hall of Fame center. That's great. Hall of Fame centers don't get paid like quality right tackles. Mm. That's not the same thing. That's not what the market is. If you're a quality right tackle, why on earth would you want to do anything but be paid like a quality right tackle? It's just, you can think all you want about Zach Tom being better. I've been saying this since the middle of last year. Look, I think Zach Tom, guard or center, I think he'd be an all pro there. He'd be better inside. Doesn't mean that you get paid better. So I think that's going to be very interesting to hear from Zach Tom. And, because there's a starting right guard battle position open that if Jordan Morgan wins left tackle, if Rashid Walker wins right tackle, Josh Myers is going to be the center in 2024. Long term, we don't know. He's going to be the center in 2024. Josh Myers has never gotten a legitimate threat for his starting job at center since he's been here. It's not going to change now. But there is a starting right guard position against Sean Ryan potentially open. I think it's one of the more fascinating aspects of this entire roster is the offensive line, but especially Zach Tom's a really good right tackle. Why would you want to be paid like anything but a really good right tackle?
Yeah, speaking of Hall of Fame centers, Jim Otto passing away on Monday as we record this. He's from Wausau, 1980 Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee, longtime Raiders star. I think he's like an 11-time All-Pro or something ridiculous. So just speaking of Hall of Fame centers, made me think of that. He was 88 years old, but one of the greats, one of the great Wisconsin football players of all time. Okay, before I let you go, we're here now that we're at OTAs, we can start talking about special teams again. The kicker situation is going to be up in the air. The long snapper situation is going to be up in the air. Again, I kind of go back to that question I just asked. If you learn anything in OTAs about special team reps, sometimes I feel like you don't learn anything about special team reps at any point. It's all about what happens in games because guys can drill shot after shot in practice and then it just doesn't translate. I kind of feel like Anders Carlson was somewhat in that boat. I don't know, but give me your take on how that's going to transpire.
Fierce competition from now and it's started at the beginning of the offseason, but from now to the end of training camp. They badly want Anders Carlson to be the guy, because when you use a draft pick on a specialist, you don't want it to burn out second season. That is bad. For all the great drafting that Brian Gutekunst has done lately, that would be really, really bad. That's wasteful. They badly want him to win it, but they also know that they're not the team they were last year, at least the team that thought they might be last year. Like a year ago, they didn't know who they were going to be. They certainly did not expect to contend as dramatically and quickly as they did last year. They didn't see the season ending in the NFC divisional playoff round in San Francisco with a very real chance to not only get to the NFC championship game, but win that game and get to the Super Bowl. They didn't see that coming. Now they do. Now they know they're contenders, and they are bound and determined, no matter what, to not have the disaster of a kicking situation from last year repeat itself. Because as bad as it would be to miss on Anders Carlson, there is something worse, and that's the kicking situation last year, now that you're a contender. That is far worse. So it's going to be we talk about competition. It's going to be as fierce a competition you see on this roster. Rhys Bisaccia is not going to leave a stone unturned to make sure that he gets the right guy in that position, because this is a team now that is expecting late season big games that hinge on potentially big kicks.
Yeah, I think if they could have gone back and known what they know now, they would have probably moved on from Mason Crosby a year earlier, work in a new kicker, figure out for that season that didn't end the way they wanted it to, and then maybe that guy is a little bit better suited to be in a playoff run. As was the case here in the 2023 season. Anything else, Ryan? Before I send you away.
Well, you dropped that Jim Otto.
I did, yes.
Which is not surprising, because JR, as we know, you are the expert on Wisconsin athletes.
I do keep track of the Wisconsin athletes of the world. Yes, my wife thinks it's annoying. She's like, you only care about him because he's from Wisconsin, and I'm like, guilty. That's right. That's true. I'm sorry.
You are a walking textbook on Wisconsin athletes. So I thought I'd ask the textbook. Do we have to wait to crown Tyrese Haliburton the greatest basketball player ever from the state of Wisconsin, or is that fair to do so now?
So we have to wait because he needs a little bit of longevity first. Latrell Sprewell is a guy that we'd probably have to throw out there, multiple time All Star, but Tyrese Haliburton as a two time All Star, that's better than I think every other Wisconsin guy that's come before him. Now our boss Robert Zizzo threw out a couple names. Those are quality guys. Fred Brown was one of the names. Terry Porter, who had a really nice career with the Blazers, went to some finals. They were one-time All-Stars. Like, that's a big deal in the NBA when only a small subset of guys become All-Stars. Tyrese is two already, and he's 24, whatever, 25.
Terry Porter had two himself, by the way. Yes, he had a long career, which is, to your point,
yes,
there's longevity there that matters. But two.
So I should have changed him if he had two. I thought he only had one. But yes, like Tyrese is on track for sure to being the Oshkosh North product, to being the greatest Wisconsin basketball player. Devin Harris played forever, one time All-Star, but like had a really nice career. There are guys that you probably have to rank ahead of him now. But I mean, especially if Indiana beats Boston, it's going to get harder and harder. He's going to be the guy.
Oh, it's happening, JR.
It might be.
You're already here first. Pacers into the NBA Finals for the first time since 2000, second time ever. Yes, I'm a big Pacers fan, lifelong from Indiana. I'm just relishing how many Bucks fans were filling my Twitter mentions 2 weeks ago about how the Pacers weren't going to win a game against the Knicks, and now it's like, oh no, it's not that impressive. They were all injured and everything. Well, wait a second. 2 weeks ago, it was like, oh, the Pacers are going to get swept. They're going to lose all four games. No, the Pacers play the brand of ball that the NBA is built on now, from depth to pace to scoring oodles of points. Mm-hmm. There's not much defense in the league. So when your team doesn't play much defense, you kind of get away with just filling it up. That's going to be fun. But Tyrese Haliburton, he's the truth, man. I'll take Latrell Sprewell right now, this moment in time, five All-Star games. He's been the best player on teams that went far. But I don't think it's much more. I don't think it's many more years until Tyrese Haliburton is going to be that guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I tell you what, when the Knicks went up 2-0, I thought they were gonna sweep the Pacers too. I thought, okay, this is curtains. I did not think Indiana would get back into that series, but
give a little faith. I think a lot of people know that I'm a fairly big Mets fan, right?
Yeah,
from Indiana. Like I haven't kept that a secret. People don't know the Pacers thing with me because they haven't won a playoff series since 2014. That's my first run. I've been here since 2014, and they've done nothing. So JR, I was with you. I had zero expectation of them winning this series. And I don't think they're going to win against Boston either. But you know what? Sometimes you just got to spark a little faith. Yep. You got to believe in what you don't see.
An eighth seed went to the NBA Finals last year out of the East. So what?
An eighth seed went to the NBA Finals in 1999 against the Indiana Pacers, too, was the New York Knicks.
With who was on that team?
Latrell Sprewell. And Alan Gibson. Oh, I hated that team. Oh, I was not a fan.
Oh, we got it. Full circle. A lot of football, a little bit of basketball. He is Ryan Wood of PackersNews.com. Find everything he has there on this team. He'll be at OTAs this week. Lots of interesting updates. Follow him on Twitter as well, by Ryan Wood. And you can get some real-time updates there as well. Ryan, thank you for joining me. We'll chat with you again very soon.
Take care.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.